You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition. I'm Dave Raymond, and this week, well, we covered a lot of ground. Bullpen in Seattle hasn't given up a home run, and this team may be built for greatness. Garrett Richards has come back for the Angels. Rangers are still looking for an identity. Houston finally left the state of Texas. And then in Oakland, they're still trying to figure out what happened with the text messages. Alden, a 5-8 start for the Angels as we begin week three of play in the regular season. Not where I think folks would have expected them to be. The offense has just not really shown up yet.
Yeah, I think the Angels have become traditional slow starters. Ever since I've covered them, this is my fourth year, they've had bad to mediocre Aprils. Even before that as well. I don't know what it is. It's just something about this team that usually out of the gate, they're kind of slow. And, you know, they could be clicking on all cylinders in spring training, and then the season starts, and it just kind of takes them a while. They looked really good in spring training. All of their hitters were driving the ball the other way. They looked like they had their timing at the plate. And now everybody's just trying to regain their footing here. I mean, the Angels' offense for these first two-plus weeks has been Mike Trout, kind of carrying everybody, with some guys showing some signs here and there, Albert Pujols occasionally, David Freese occasionally. But for the most part, Mike Trout just hasn't had much help. We've seen Matt Joyce struggle. We've seen C.J. Cron struggle a lot, Chris Iannetta. They haven't really gotten any depth in their lineup. Eric Ibar hasn't really gotten going yet either. You know, we asked Albert Pujols about it after the game. He said, you know, ask us in September, you know, and we'll see where we're at. And, you know, he has every reason to be confident in this team. This is a group that led the major league runs. You know, yeah, they don't have Howie Kendrick this year. They have no idea what they're going to get out of Josh Hamilton, if they'll even have him at all. But, you know, as Mike Socha said after Sunday's game, there's a lot of good hitters in that lineup who haven't really gotten going yet. And that happens a lot in baseball. Offense is down for the most part throughout the major leagues. And, you know, the Angels just haven't really gotten going yet. I expect them to be better. This is a good offense. I don't know if this is as great an offense as this was last year, but they're definitely going to get better than this. I think the main thing with them is they're having a really hard time manufacturing runs right now. The majority of their runs have come via home run, and that's never really a good sign for an offense. You want an offense that's really clicking on all cylinders, moving guys over, hitting with runners in scoring position. The Angels went 1-for-16. With runners in scoring position while losing 2-of-3 in Houston. That's a really bad sign for an offense.
Yeah, well, good point. What about Howie Kendrick, though? You bring up the name. How much do they miss him?
Oh, they're going to miss him a lot, and they knew it ever since they made that trade. I mean, the one thing that was really clear about that trade was this was not about 2015. It was about moving forward, and that was a risk that they were willing to take. They were going to give up 1 year of control for Howie Kendrick, for 6 years of control for Andrew Heaney, a young starting pitcher who they really like and who they think is really going to blossom into their rotation eventually. Fans are frustrated over it right now because Andrew Heaney's in AAA. Howie Kendrick is getting walk-off hits for the Dodgers, and the Angels' offense is struggling right now. But, you know, give it time. Johnny Giovatella has played fine. He's made the plays he's supposed to make defensively, and he's actually been one of their better hitters. He's not really a guy they have to rely on. And the thing about this trade was they did it while knowing that they were going to have to get more out of other guys. David Freese was going to have a better year. At the time that they made it, they thought they were going to have Josh Hamilton, and Josh Hamilton could have a better year. Matt Joyce was going to step up. None of those things has really happened yet, and I think that's what's really hurting them right now.
The Angels survived their week in Texas. Three against the Rangers, three against the Astros. In fact, split those six games. And we talked about it last week, Alden. You know, Josh Hamilton was going to be at least accessible while in the state of Texas. And then I think on Monday, reports coming out that maybe the Angels have come up with a plan and are working together a little bit here with Hamilton. And maybe all this, who knows, maybe all this has been forced to the front by the offense's struggles. What do you make of this developing story?
Well, there was a report recently that on Monday from the LA Times that the Angels have a plan in place for Josh just a tentative plan to get him back, and I'm not surprised by that. You know, the players that I spoke to who reached out to Josh and went to see Josh when the team was in Houston over the weekend from Wednesday night till Sunday afternoon, you know, the one takeaway that they had from Josh is that he's ready to play baseball. When this first when reports of a drug relapse first circled, a lot of people chimed in from the outside saying maybe it's best that Josh give up baseball so he could focus on himself. Maybe the passion is not there anymore. But that was far from the truth from anybody who saw him. C.J. Wilson, his longtime teammate, said that Josh 100% has his mind on baseball right now and wants to get back. David Freese said the same thing. He looks huge, everybody said. He's 250 pounds. He's in great shape. He's been working out. He's been hitting since March, some of the guys have told me. The one takeaway that I have, and again, without having spoken to Josh myself, is that he's ready to come back and play baseball. The question is, and continues to be, whether Josh is going to play baseball with the Angels. And that's going to be up to owner Artie Moreno. And owner Artie Moreno has expressed his disappointment in Josh for the relapse. And when we asked him candidly during the home opener a couple of Fridays ago if he could guarantee that Josh Hamilton will play again, he said he will not say that. He has pointedly declined to say that Josh will play for them. And so it's going to be up to him at the end of the day. What putting him on a rehab schedule does for the Angels at the very least, though, is they're doing their due diligence. If they want to eventually trade Josh Hamilton, then it only serves them right to put him through a rehab program, get him an extended spring, get him to suit up for the AAA affiliate, play in some games. Even if he does not end up coming back, at the very least he's showcasing himself to other teams, making him more appealing, making him want to play baseball even more. So just keeping him in Houston isolated there just does nothing for the team right now. And it's going to get really interesting because we talked about earlier, it's early. It's very early in the season. There's still a long way to go and the offense is going to get better. But what if it doesn't? What if we're a month later into the season, 2 months later into the season, and they're still scuffling and Josh Hamilton looks good in a rehab assignment? I know these are a lot of what ifs, but maybe the Josh Hamilton camp starts to gain a little momentum and he actually does come back to the Angels. You know, I've been saying it for a while. We've been talking about it that, you know, there's a growing sense that Josh isn't being welcomed back and will not play for the Angels anymore. But this is a fluid situation. This is a team that wants to win. This is a team that has a lot of money invested in Josh Hamilton. If they continue to struggle and Josh looks good, maybe they take him back.
You could see where a stance might soften just a little bit. And offense so much at a premium these days in the game. It's funny how those things ebb and flow year to year, decade to decade. But do you think there would be a pretty robust market out there for him if indeed he rehabbed and looked like he was in good baseball shape?
I don't think there definitely would not be a robust market for him because this is a guy who, by the time he's ready, he's going to be 34 years old. He still is coming off shoulder surgery. He still has two subpar seasons under his belt. So he's owed a lot of money. No matter how good he looks, the Angels are going to have to eat up a lot of money from that contract in order to get rid of him. And that's why I think we'll bring more questions about whether it's just best to just bring him back, you know, whether it's just best to swallow a little bit of pride and see what he can do for the Angels because his teammates love him. You know, they love him as a person, and they're curious to see what he could do on the baseball field if he's fully healthy. He wasn't really that ever at any point last year. And he showed some signs of being the hitter that he used to be down the stretch during the 2013 season. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think the market for him is very robust at all because of the contract, the history, and, you know, the drug addiction issues. And that's what's going to make this even more fascinating.
Yeah. Well, on the positive side of things, Garrett Richards made his comeback, and you thought he looked pretty good?
His stuff looked good. And it wasn't surprising, but, you know, it was hard to judge his outing just based on his line score. He gave up four runs. Three of them were earned. He gave up five hits, Three of them were infield hits. The other two weren't really hit that hard. He gave up a two-run homer to Luis Valbuena to left field. That's a really short field. That's a really short fence. It's 315 feet away and left, 15-foot tall scoreboard. It was, I don't want to call it a cheap shot home run, but it wasn't really well struck either. And he walked four guys. You could tell in the first inning that he was a little over-amped, which, you know, it's not surprising. This guy has been, you know, 8 months. It was almost 8 months to the day since he ruptured his left patella tendon. He was really excited to get back out there, and you could see it from the very first inning. But there was also a lot of balls in the zone that were that should have been strikes that were called balls. Drew Butera had a little bit of a hard time catching Garrett Richards, which is also understandable. Garrett Richards led the major league in wild pitches last year. And it's not because he's wild. It's just because he's really hard to catch. He's got a mid to high 90s fastball that has a lot of movement on it. He's got this huge slider that's thrown in the mid-80s that's really tough to corral. And the entire complexion of his start changed in that fifth inning. He was really cruising along after getting out of the first inning jam, and he retired the first two batters really quickly. It looked like he was on his way to pitch the sixth inning, maybe even the seventh. He gives up a little infield single. He gives up a four-pitch walk, and then he strikes out Jed Lowrie on an 0-2 fastball, an 0-2 slider in the dirt, gets away from Drew Butera. Butera throws it away. The next batter gets an infield single, and he gets an RBI out of it. I mean, it was just a lot of bad luck, and it ended up being a loss for the Angels. But I think the important thing is Garrett is a legit top-of-the-rotation starter. His stuff is there. His knee looked good. It looked like he bounced off the mound pretty good to cover first base on three rollers to the right side. He completed a 3-1 when Albert Pujols flipped him one. Everything looked good for Garrett. I think for the most part, they're just excited to have him back in the rotation. This is a top-of-the-rotation starter, and he is the only one in the Angels rotation who throws harder than 92 miles an hour. He was 95, 96 with his fastball on Saturday. So it looks like he's ready to go.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly huge news for the Angels as they enter an interesting stretch right now in the middle of the stretch where they will play 7 of 11 games against the Oakland A's. All right, Alden, great stuff as always. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Jane, it's a long road trip. You guys have been out there for a while. You still have a ways to go. And yet, a more than eventful road trip for the Oakland A's. How would you sum up all the activity in Kansas City?
I think eventful is a good word. Just a lot of drama there, you know, starting with the first night. You know, I think the feeling in the A's clubhouse was that Brett Laurie was simply trying to break up what he thought was going to be a double play. And of course, it's unfortunate that Alcides Escobar was hurt on the play. Everyone in the clubhouse acknowledged that. You know, they said first and foremost, you know, our thoughts are with him. You know, we hope it's not serious, and it turns out it wasn't. But then, you know, then we saw the retaliation the second day, and I think everyone thought, okay, well, this has to be over. You know, they threw at Laurie. You know, let's put this to rest. And the fact that it continued into the third day, I think everyone was just kind of worn out by the situation, frustrated by the situation, and you saw it on both sides. And I think the A's thought that, you know, they handled it pretty well. I mean, in the end, they didn't have any player ejected. You know, they probably won't be facing any suspensions like the Royals likely will today. And, you know, from there, they kept saying, you know, they liked the way their guys handled things. And it could have been as crazy and eventful and dramatic as it was, it actually could have been worse. You know, in the end, no punches were thrown. Nobody was hurt. That's the most important thing. But at the same time, it's not over. The Royals come back to Oakland in June, so it should be interesting to see the way this continues to unfold, which it's crazy that we're even saying that it's still going on. But, you know, unfortunately, these things happen, and I can't imagine that it's over when they play each other next.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on this one. How much longer do these things have to stretch out? But I'm pretty impressed that the A's, under the circumstances, did control themselves as much as they did. There were plenty of opportunities there to get upset and for somebody, you know, to make a move, right? To ignite.
Oh yeah, I mean, and especially when you have, you know, the guy in the middle of this all is Brett Laurie, and I think everyone knows that Brett Laurie has a big personality. You know, he can get heated. I think we saw in post game interviews, especially, you know, after the last game when, you know, he said that Kelvin Herrera had, you know, pointed at his head, gesturing at Laurie, you know, saying basically, well, that's where I'm going to hit you next time. And that's what really got him going. I mean, he, you know, when the pitch was thrown behind him, he actually stayed pretty calm and cool. And he had said the night before, you know, I don't want to throw gasoline on this thing. I, you know, want to go out there and I'm just trying to do my job. But then, you know, the next day, the fact that he can't even, you know, go up to the plate, he said, without worrying that, you know, one of their guys that throws 100 miles per hour is going to, you know, throw at him. And then to see the gesture that he said, you know, Herrera gave him, that's what really upset him. But he's still in the moment, you know, I think we saw him very upset, but it could have been worse. And I think that, you know, his emotions after the game were, you can't blame him for being so upset. But, you know, this is a team that's also led by a very calm, cool, collected manager in Bob Melvin. And I think that kind of filters through the club. And, you know, I think they realized, adding to the fire, adding to all this, wasn't going to help them. You know, it wasn't going to do anyone any good. And they were trying to kind of stop this whole thing. You know, they didn't want it to continue at all. And the fact it did through Sunday took them by surprise. And, you know, they're frustrated. They called, you know, the Herrera unprofessional and for what he did. But other than that, I think they really handled it, you know, as well as could be.
Yeah, I would agree. What about the text message? Where do you come down on the whole text message thing?
I know. I think that's the silliest thing I've ever had to write about. I don't know. One guy is saying he received a text message and he actually has the text message on his phone in Spanish. The other guy is saying, no, I don't have a text message from Laurie. And then you look at his phone and, no, there is not a text message from Laurie. And I think, you know, a lot of people's first thoughts are, well, it's easier to delete a message, you know, than to make one appear. But, you know, I don't know. No one knows what happened. I mean, so many things can happen with phones that, you know, it might be easier to believe one over the other, but in the end, I mean, I don't think no one will ever really be able to figure out TextGate. It was a little silly, and, you know, it's just too bad that, you know, something like that has to happen to where, you know, people are going back and forth between clubhouses, and, you know, players. I think there was a sincere apology from Laurie. I think he really was from the day it all began, truly sorry. And, you know, he told us that he did apologize to Escobar. And, you know, so from a media standpoint, we reported that, but we also have to report, you know, what Escobar says. And Escobar says he never received it from Laurie. So it's a strange situation, really just a strange weekend overall for them.
Yeah, bizarre. It's got to be crazy to be in the middle of it. But the other side of this now is that on this long road trip, the A's are 4-3 with three games remaining in Anaheim. They have to feel very good about that part of it, right?
Yeah, they do. I think, you know, Kansas City was frustrating. The fact that they left there, you know, with two losses after all that happened, that was pretty demoralizing. But the fact that, you know, they came right back, got a big win in Anaheim last night. And in the fashion they did, too, was huge. I mean, this is a bullpen that has taken four of their losses this year. And just, you know, we've seen some not-so-pretty performances from them, including the final day in Kansas City. And so when Kendall Graveman comes out and he only goes three innings, you're thinking, well, uh-oh, you know, now the bullpen has to pick up six innings. And they toss six scoreless innings. And I think that was just a huge boost for not just the bullpen, but the team overall. I think they needed something like that. And, you know, I think this could be maybe the start of something good for the bullpen. You know, and I think also any win against the Angels, that's got to make them feel good. I mean, I know the Angels haven't gotten off to the start they want, especially offensively, but and they're still division rivals, considered, you know, probably favorites to win the division. So I think it was important for them to get that first one.
So heavily scheduled in the division in these first, well, the first month of the season. Oakland, are they happy with the way things have gone to this point? I mean, it's nobody who has really handled them well at this stage. But at the same time, it's just sort of treading water.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's weird. You know, there's a lot of parity in the division right now and just throughout baseball. I mean, you look at, you know, everyone's records, no one's really kind of run away aside from the Royals and the Tigers. And I think, you know, from the A's standpoint, you know, the four losses that the bullpen has that I mentioned, you know, that's a lot in a little time. So if they can get that ironed out, I think they feel pretty good about themselves. They're always going to have, you know, a good performance from their rotation. And their offense, I think, you know, is surprising some people with, you know, how it's come together and how they're stringing some runs together. You know, they're not relying on one or two people. They have up and down that lineup, you know, guys not only that can hit the ball at the ballpark, but can get on base, drive in runs. You know, they're not solely relying on the home run like they've done in previous years, but, you know, they're getting other extra base hits. You know, they're hitting a lot of doubles, just plain fundamental baseball. So I think from that standpoint, you know, they are pretty happy at this point, you know, at their play.
Yeah, well, they probably should be, although it'll be interesting to see, too, how Ben Zobrist comes out of this knee situation here in the next couple of days. Jane, great stuff, as always. Hang in there. This long road trip is almost over, I promise.
Thank you.
As we get ready for week three of the season and looking back at week two, Greg, you know, there have been some up moments and down moments for the Seattle Mariners and it's early portion of the season, but they sure wrapped up week two in fine fashion. What an incredible victory over the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, that was one that you might look back on. You know, sometimes you have a big win, and it's a big win, and you go on to the next day and things change. I harken back. Yesterday's game, they come from behind, win 11-10 over the Rangers when everything was looking grim. You know, it reminded me, honestly, of last year. They played the Astros. It was about 3 weeks into the season. They were 7-13 at the time. They'd lost eight in a row. Kyle Seager was hitting like a .150. He hadn't hit a home run and had like two RBIs. He hits two homers and one's a walk off. They win the game, snap the 8-game losing streak, and they go. It turned their season around. Literally turned their season around. They went, I think, 80-62 the rest of the way. And Seager made the All Star team. All those things. Sometimes a season when you look back can change. Who knows what this win will do in the long run, but when I saw yesterday's game, that was one that you can hang your hat on and build on, and they showed a lot of stuff. Down 10-5 to the Rangers. Neftali Feliz, guy they never scored on in 20 plus innings, and they put together a rally. And Nelson Cruz, pair home runs, gets a game winning hit in the bottom of the ninth on a single, bases loaded. Everything you'd want in a comeback win, and just showed a lot of grit and a lot of determination and some offense, which really is fun to see. And you know, that this is the team that they talked about, the middle of the lineup that they talked about. Cano, Cruz, Seager, a combined 9-for-15 with 9 RBIs. You can't ask for much more offensively. And certainly there's some questions on the pitching that we can probably talk about. But that was a big, big win, and certainly a fun one for the fans and the players.
Oh, man, those are, like you say, I mean, they can be season-defining games. And, you know, I think sometimes we anticipate them or we hope for them or look for them here and there. But you always know when they come. And it's funny that you would have mentioned it, because Lloyd McClendon after the game, I loved his comment. This is a team built for greatness. And he said that in response to the win. And I was going to ask you, you know, if you felt like that was hyperbole, just kind of getting caught up in the moment. But from the sounds of it, you'd agree.
It's not caught up in the moment. I can tell you why, because he's been saying it. He was saying it kind of as his defense mechanism earlier when they were struggling. He kept saying, hey, this team is built for this. He wasn't talking about the losing streak. He was talking about they were built for the grind, for the long haul. He likes this team. He likes it a lot. He thinks they are built for good things. And he just kept saying, hey, we're okay. We're going to lose some games. It's going to happen, but we're built to grind this out. We're built to go the distance here, and I like what I see. I like this team. So what he said yesterday, sure, coming in the wake of that win, I think that was more reaffirmation of what he's been saying, and I think, you know, telling everybody we're okay. We're okay. We're going to be all right. Things change, and they started out the season against some tough competition, lost some close games. Pitching wasn't quite where they wanted it to be, but it's not ready to lock this thing up with 150 games to go. There's a lot of baseball to be played, and I think he was saying, hey, this is what we can be. Here's a good glimpse of what we can do, and I like my team.
Well, who wouldn't like this team right now with the way Nelson Cruz has been hitting? A phenomenal run. 8 home runs in the first 12 games, to 14 RBIs. I wanted to ask you in the context of the Seattle Mariners, if you have seen any run quite like Nelly Cruz for the beginning of the season. But really, I mean, if you can stretch it out a little bit, it's somewhat Bonzian back in the day. I don't really even know who else to compare it to. It's a phenomenal run.
Yeah, there's only really one name in Mariners history that you could put up against, and that would be Mr. Ken Griffey Jr. Back in '93. It wasn't right out of the gate like this, but he had 8 games in a row that he homered in 1993, and that was a phenomenal stretch of baseball. I think it was June, and that tied a major league record that still stands, 8 games in a row with a home run. Cruz did it 5 games in a row, and then took a day or two off, and then came back and hit 2 on Sunday. So he had 8 homers in 8 games, with two games of 2 homers in there. So that's a pretty phenomenal stretch. It's coming out of the chute in the first 12 games of a season. It's the most home runs for any player in baseball since 2007, when Alex Rodriguez did it for the Yankees, and that was a year A-Rod went on, and I think it hit 54 bombs, 156 RBIs, and was AL MVP. So that doesn't mean that's going to happen for sure, but that is the kind of streak that you see guys hit when they're having phenomenal seasons. And certainly Nelson Cruz, everything they could hope for here out of the gates.
Oh man, and it's interesting coming against the Rangers. And of course, he delivers the big hit to win the game in the ninth inning, and the 11-2 victory on Sunday. And Cruz is the guy who the Rangers were very much entertaining, but did not sign. And I know they're kind of ruining that decision at the moment. But you've referenced pitching. And, for all the King Felix talk over the years and the performances he's been able to put up, I mean, there have been question marks this year with, early on, it's just with the health there. But, he's come back. He's fine. James Paxton really struggling. What is the feeling right now about the starting pitching? How comfortable is Lloyd, and what are the general thoughts?
Well, I think the feeling is, hey, we got to get this turned around because this is the backbone of this team. This whole season is built on, hey, we've got great pitching, some of the best in baseball, and if we can improve that offense a tick, this is going to be a pretty darn good team. And so far, they've seen the where that offense can come from, but the pitching hasn't come through. So if they can get that squared away, that's the formula they're looking at. And they like the pieces, but everything hasn't fit into place real early in that starting rotation. And it's pretty stunning to see coming out. They've got their starter ERA is 5.48, which is 28th in Major League Baseball coming out of the weekend here. That's not what you expect to see from a Mariners club with the guys they've got. And a lot of it's their two young guys have gotten off to a rough start. James Paxton and Taijuan Walker have not been. Paxton was pretty good his first start, and then kind of good started well and ran into problems against the Dodgers and then just was not good at all against the Rangers in his third start. And Taiwan Walker, first two starts, has not been sharp at all after a really outstanding spring. So those are two young guys that you know, all the potential in the world. They're certainly expecting them to be fine, but certainly need to get that fixed up. And Sasha Iwakuma, who's been a huge part of this rotation, you know, one of the underselling players in baseball, I think, over the last 2 years, has not gotten off to a good start. So, you know, those three guys not pitching real well. The interesting thing, Jay Happ was a guy people were concerned about out of spring, and he's been very solid in his first two starts. So, they got Happ pitching well. Felix is Felix, and they need to get those other guys squared away. And if they do, they should be pretty darn good. The bullpen, one of the best in baseball last year, in fact, the lowest ERA in baseball last year. They expect those guys to be fine, but they got to get the starters squared away.
Yeah, bullpen, they haven't given up a home run yet, right?
They have not. Rodney, a couple rough outings, wasn't great. They've been solid. They can be better. They got a couple guys where Tom Wilhelmsen on the DL is certainly an issue, but he should be back here before too long. They haven't been as locked down as they were last year. They haven't given up the long ball, which is certainly nice. They can get a little sharper too, though. So, but as we like to say, it's darn early, and I think they should be fine.
Yeah, and I guess going back to what we were talking about at the beginning, McClendon's thoughts about this team and the way they have played and maybe scratched out some wins. Starting pitching struggled a little bit. Maybe the bullpen picks them up. You've got the Jay Happ, perhaps you could argue, picking up guys like Paxton and Walker to this point. So that's what it takes, right? I mean, that's what it takes to survive 162 games and actually get something out of it at the end.
Oh, it certainly is. And you say it's early, but you point it out with things like Robinson Cano is 3-for-25 in his first seven or eight games. It's almost hard for Robinson Cano to have that kind of start. I mean, he's just too good a hitter. He's since turned it around in almost 500 his last four or five games. Cruz, we talk about, but for all the things he's done, he was 1-for-15, didn't have an RBI coming out of the gate his first four games. Everybody's going, where's the big guy? And then next thing you know, he's hitting balls over the wall left and right. So things can change quickly in this game, and certainly there'll be a lot of ebbs and tides over the course of the season. But I think, again, the Mariners like what they've got, and they're ready to see where they go with it.
All right. Well, good stuff, Greg. I mean, last year they turned it around against the Astros. This year they turned it around the day before the Astros come to town for a series up there at Safeco. Enjoy the baseball, and as always, thanks for the time, Greg. For the first time all year, Brian McTaggart not in the state of Texas, at least for the regular season, as this may be as noteworthy a departure from the state of Texas as Smokey and the Bandit heading out with their big rig in 1977 B-Tags. The Astros almost made it to the All-Star break.
They did. I brought my passport out. I thought I might have my passport leaving, but they just waved me on through. So 2 weeks to start the regular season without leaving a Lone Star State. But Astros beginning a pretty big nine-game West Coast road trip here in Seattle.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to get to, because we're talking about the division-leading Houston Astros at 6-6. And I know things haven't gone as perfectly as A.J. Hinch would like, but they have to be happy with where they stand, making this a pretty big stretch for them.
Yeah, especially when you consider their offense has really been really poor. They're getting nothing out of Chris Carter, very little out of Evan Gattis. And here they are sitting at 6-6. I think it's because, their pen has been really, really good. And, we've talked before, that's the one area where they really upgraded, and they thought that could really make a difference in the win-loss column, and it has. And their starting pitching, by and large, has been pretty good, but they had not won a game that Dallas Keuchel or Colin McHugh had started until Sunday, when Scott Feldman pitched well, and they won that game. So it was kind of, they were 5-0 when Feldman and Keuchel pitched, and 0-6 when everyone else pitched until Sunday, when Feldman pitched six pretty good innings. So they're going to need the other guys in the rotation to step up as well. But yeah, to be 6-6, considering the struggles of the offense and not hitting with runners in scoring position and the guys in the meat of the order just not getting it done, I think they take that at this point.
Now, you talk about the bullpen too, and what a difference over not just last year, but really the last couple of years in Houston. That had been such a big problem for them. And I know it was right at the top of the list for Jeff Luhnow in the offseason. You know, aside from just the simple performance metrics that you can talk about, psychologically, what has that meant in the clubhouse or just around the team?
Well, it's been a lot. I mean, we've seen it the first couple of weeks. Even on Sunday, they have a 4-3 lead, and Gregerson comes in and just, you know, gets three quick outs, and they're out of it. I mean, those games were really struggles in the last few years. And, you know, when you're a young team like they are or were, I know they're still young, but the last previous 2 years they were even younger. You're a young team, and you're scratching and clawing, and you have a 2-1 lead going to the ninth or the eighth, and your bullpen blows you. That's demoralizing. That happened over and over for the Astros. I think they've had over 70 blown saves the last 3 years, which is the most in the major leagues, I think 50-something in the last 2 years. So to have that gut shot happen to you over and over really is demoralizing. And I think it's going to be different this year. If Astro Wondrowski goes out on Monday and pitches well, young guy in his second start, pitches well, he's got to feel good that the bullpen's going to hold it for him, not that he's going to go out of order because the bullpen's going to cough it up. And we've seen that through 2 weeks, 6-6, not great, but I think because of the bullpen is the reason they're 6-6, and maybe not 4-8 like they might have been in years past.
And to stay on the psychological side of it too, what does it mean for them to just have somebody other than, you know, McHugh or Keuchel win a game? When Feldman actually got into the win column the other day, you know, how big was that?
Well, it was big. You know, I asked Scott about that after the game Sunday. He actually said, "Cool." I just said, "I didn't even know that. I'm glad I didn't know that. I would have put more pressure on myself." So, and that was one of the things last year. They were well over 500 when those two guys pitched, well under 500 when the other three guys. So, if they're going to finish 500, they're going to need one of those other three guys to step up and win 12, 13 games. Maybe it's Feldman. He's had two starts, one poor start. Maybe it's Wojciechowski, who's, you know, a rookie. We don't know what he's going to do yet. Will Brad Peacock come back? He just cannot stay healthy. Roberto Hernandez, I think you know what you're going to get out of him. You know, I don't think he's going to be the guy that's going to step up and be the third starter. But they're going to need one of those three guys at the bottom of the rotation to do something and just provide some support for Keuchel and McHugh, because they were excellent last year. They're off to terrific starts. Both of them look really, really good. I mean, Keuchel's got a sub-1 ERA through three starts. Struck out 11 his last time out, looked absolutely dominant. So it's fun watching those guys pitch. And if they could just get one more starter that could go out there and give them a quality start every time out there, in pretty good shape.
Of course, if somebody's going to have to do something offensively here eventually, right? I mean, this is pretty remarkable. I think a team batting average right at or maybe just a smidge above 200, and they lead the planet in strikeouts. Is that tenable? I mean, it certainly looks like a roster that's going to strike out a lot. And so I suspect that Luhnow and A.J. Hinch and company are comfortable with that. But there's got to be a limit, no?
Yeah, I mean, I think we knew they were going to strike out, but they also thought they were going to score a lot of runs, and that hasn't been the case yet. And maybe you look at it as, hey, they have a lot of runs coming in these bats because they've done nothing for 2 weeks, a lot of these guys. And you think if they end up where their averages are, their expectations that Evan Gattis and Chris Carter are really going to go on some tears here very soon. And, you know, Chris Carter, who's struggled really, really terribly, has hit the ball really well in Seattle in his career. So I know a lot of people are wondering, boy, what are they going to do with Carter? Are they going to bench him? How long can he keep him out there? But he's hit the ball really well in Safeco Field. So if ever he's going to get going, this is a series to get going. We saw on Sunday Luis Valbuena goes the opposite way for a home run. He's now homered in two of his last three games, almost hit a second home run on Sunday. So maybe he's coming around a little bit. Jed Lowrie, I think, is going to be fine. Castro's been fine. I'd say the guy who's really, other than Altuve, who's been really their offensive spark plug is Jake Marisnik at the bottom of the order, hitting ninth. He gets on base. He runs. He creates havoc. He really sets it up for Altuve when Altuve follows him to the lineup. But Marisnik has been the biggest pleasant surprise so far for the Astros. And these guys are going to come around, I think. I mean, Chris Carter was a good offensive player last year. He had his ups and downs. He had a two-month stretch where he was playing the best baseball offensively of anyone in the league. I think once he gets going, you know, I think the water will rise, and we'll see what Chris Carter can do.
How patient can they be with him, though? I mean, at what point do they make some adjustments? And to that end, where do they go if not Chris Carter.
Yeah, I mean, what do? You have John Singleton, but, you know, he's kind of the guy's gone through similar struggles. His numbers in AAA are okay, you know, only 10 games in for them, but is he the savior at this point at first base? I do think that if they come back from this road trip, Carter is still just absolutely lost at the plate. They have to do something. I mean, they just can't. They can't go 70, 80 bats into the season and have Chris Carter hitting under 100 and not driving anybody and not hitting any home runs. That means he's not doing anything for you. What they do, I don't know. Maybe they will call up Singleton and try to go from there. But I certainly think they, you know, Carter, this is going to be a big road trip for him going, as I said, Seattle. He's hit well going to Oakland where he used to play. I think he fit pretty well there. You know, they're going to face some tough pitching. They do miss Felix Hernandez here in Seattle, but we know the kind of pitching that Oakland has, and we know the kind of pitching San Diego has. So it's not going to be easy for Chris Carter, but I certainly think by the end of this road trip, if he's not hitting, I think they have to be searching for some kind of answers or something else.
Well, what do they want to get done on this trip? I mean, you know, as they go into it sitting in first place, 6-6, is 500 realistic? Is that sort of the goal on this trip? I mean, obviously, I mean, it's an odd number of games. You can't get 500 exactly, but would they be happy 4-5?
I think they'd be thrilled with 4-5 if you consider the place that they're going and who they're playing. I mean, they played Seattle pretty competitively for the last couple of years. And, you know, they are missing King Felix, and that's going to help. Oakland's given them fits through the years. And even though Oakland's a different team, when they came into Houston last week, they still give them fits in a couple of those games. And then we all know San Diego's new and improved, and that's the interleague game now, and the pitchers are going to be batting and so forth. So, you know, I think if they go 4-5 on a road trip like that, I mean, I think you take it. I mean, someone asked me the other day on Twitter what I thought they would do, and I said 3-7. I mean, I haven't looked to see how many games Keuchel and McHugh are going to start, but you got to think those guys are going to at least start maybe four games between the two, and maybe they win three of those. And to go back to what we're talking about earlier, somebody else has to step up and go out there and throw 6-7 shutout innings, and when the offense is struggling, give them a chance to win.
Yeah, the real trouble here might be that, you know, if you want to kickstart an offense, this is not exactly the greatest recipe with those three stops, man. But listen, I hope you don't get bewildered being out of the state of Texas. If you need any help, somebody can draw you a map and get you back here in a week or so. But have a great trip, be tags, and we'll do it again next week.
Hey, I might go to the Space Needle, see if I can still see it, though. But we'll talk next week.
TR, I'm trying to figure out exactly what the identity, if you will, of this Rangers team is. I don't know. Coming off last year, such a devastating year with all the injuries and then ultimately the poor record. Been a lot more injuries again this year. I just feel like if the team's still kind of searching, where do you see this team right now?
Well, right now, they're not searching for an identity. They're searching for a rotation. They got four starters. They have a fifth spot open because of their off days they have this week. They don't need a fifth starter till Tuesday. And right now, they don't know who that would be. It might be Anthony Bass out of the bullpen. It could be Wandy Rodriguez out of the minor leagues, Anthony Renato, Alex Gonzalez. I mean, they're searching right now for pitching help. They're still trying to figure out what they have in the bullpen. The biggest thing the Rangers are doing right now is trying to settle on a pitching staff that they can stick with for an extended period of time.
Of course, they've gotten some good games out of Colby Lewis and Giovanni Gallardo. Nick Martinez has been really good. So, I mean, do they feel like they've got the core of the rotation in place? They feel comfortable with that piece of it at least?
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's just three starters. I mean, all three of those guys have pitched pretty well. But Ross Detweiler has not pitched well. He's had three bad games. They lost Derek Holland. They've lost a lot of their depth because of injuries. So it's still a mystery who that fifth person would be. You know, maybe they'll try Wandy Rodriguez, see how he can do for a while. You know, they're not going to get Holland back till June. So either that or they can bring Anthony Renato back. You know, we'll see.
Well, you know, staying on the pitcher side of it, Feliz, you know, it looks like, you know, he may not be the same guy. Obviously, the velocity isn't quite the same at times. There have been some who are talking about the arm angle being a little bit different. How do they feel about Nestor Feliz right now?
You know, there's got to be some concern, but, you know, they asked him to get five outs the other day in Seattle, and it didn't work. He blew the save. It was a tough, huge loss for the Rangers. I think there's still a question. There's no question that Feliz is not going to throw as hard as he once did, you know, after the Tommy John surgery and all he's been through. You know, he did hit 96 miles an hour on the radar gun in Seattle. Maybe the velocity will, you know, pick up a little bit as the season goes along. You know, a lot of it will have to do with his off-speed stuff, the breaking ball and changeup, and how effectively he can be there. You know, he is their closer, and he's the guy they're going to have to live and die with. You know, I don't see them do anything there. They got too many other question marks.
Well, that's true. What about Tanner Shepherd? I know he's only been back for a couple of games, but has he looked okay?
Well, he had some control problems the other day. Couldn't get the ball down in the strike zone, and that killed him. They, you know, he had a 10-6 lead going into the eighth inning, blocked three out of four batters that he faced, and they had to pull him. And they brought in the rookie, Keona Kila. You know, he walked the guy, and they had to go with Feliz. I think Shepherds will be all right. Sean Tolleson has pitched well. You know, I think they're going to have to trust Ramon Mendez a little bit more in the late inning. You know, part of the problem is they don't have a left-handed reliever. That killed him against Seattle because they had to bring in Kila to face Robinson Cano, where in the past they'd have a guy like Darren Oliver or Neil Kotz to do that duty. They don't have a left-handed reliever. They got one from St. Louis, Sam Freeman. He's down in the minor league still working on his, you know, command. They got three longmen in the bullpen, Anthony Bass, Logan Verrett, and Stomi Pimentel. That's a lot of long relievers for a pitching staff. But it shows you that they're still uncomfortable with their rotation. So, again, they've got some questions that they've got to be figured out here pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what about first base? Help me sort out what's going on there. At Fielder's comments about the team being a better team with Mitch Moreland playing first base, is that – motivated in part maybe by an interest in doing a little more DHing? What's going on over there?
Well, I think both Fielder and Mitch Moreland will play first base. Jeff Bannister made that clear the other day. I think Fielder will still get the majority of the playing time. Moreland's got an elbow situation that everybody's monitoring. He's got a loose body in that elbow, and if that, you know, lodges in the wrong spot, he's going to have surgery. You know, if it stays away and settle somewhere else, he might be all right. You know, he's been swinging the bat pretty well, but it is definitely a concern is that if that elbow is going to hold up.
Yeah, yeah. He's so prone to injury, it seems, in recent years. That would have to be a concern. Fielder holding up well so far this year?
Well, he's hitting 350, 360, something like that. He's getting his base hits. He hasn't hit a home run yet. He's got a few doubles. Rangers think the power will come. But, you know, so far he's at least driven in a few runs, you know, has a high on-base percentage, high batting average. You know, we'll just see what happens with the power.
Yeah, I'm just curious, you know, physically coming off the surgery and then I guess, again, the comments about, you know, maybe the team being better with Moreland at first base makes me wonder how he's feeling, you know, out there every day.
I think he's just trying to be a good teammate and not stir anything up by saying that he needs to play every day at first base. I don't think there's anything more to read into that.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Defensively, you know, I think sometimes you can make too much about errors. They're a stat, but if guys aren't getting the ball, they don't go down as errors. This team leads Major League Baseball so far with 15 errors. Is the defense an issue, or are we just looking at a number at this point?
Well, I think the defense is an issue. Elvis Andrus has to play better. I think Ruben Odor at second base will be fine. Belcher at third will be fine. You know, Shin-Soo Chu is not a great right fielder. They're still trying to figure out what they have in left field, although Carlos Baguero is pretty good. They're very good behind the plate with Corporan and Robinson Chirinos. The big guy is going to be Leonis Martin in center field, how well he plays. Great arms, got the speed. You know, if he can hold down center field and if Elvis can play at his normal level, I think they'll be okay defensively. But I think, you know, there's still some concern about Chu in the outfield and exactly what they have in left field.
Is a loss like they suffered on Sunday in Seattle, and that was a rough one, 11-10, walk off, had a big lead late, but you know, coughed it up. Is it better to have an off day after a game like that? I think in baseball we always talk about the ability to come out the next day and put it behind you. They've had to sit on it since Sunday, not playing on Monday, and they don't get after it till Tuesday night out west there against Arizona. What do you think? Could they have used that time, or would it have been better just to get back out there?
Well, I think I really believe in the old saying in baseball that your momentum is only as good as your next day starting pitcher. So if Nick Martinez comes out and pitches well Tuesday night, I don't think that'll be an issue. You know, it all just comes back to that. I mean, if Nick has a rough night, then, you know, maybe they have their problems. But if, you know, he's pitched two great games so far for them, and if he continues that, I think they'll be fine. It just comes back. You know, they got Martinez and Gallardo pitching in Arizona. If they get two good games from them, you know, they can go back and sweep the Diamondbacks and be right back where they were.
Yeah, I'm sure nobody's thrilled at a 5-8 record so far, but quite honestly, they're treading water well with all the stuff that's been going on around them. TR, great stuff as always, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week.
Okay, guys, thank you.
This has been MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition.